Welcome back to In the Shadow of the Evening Trees. I'm Jennifer Von Ebers.
I'm David Von Ebers.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Were we gone?
Well, it seemed like the week went by really fast.
It did.
Definitely. And here we are again.
Here we are again.
How's everybody doing?
Yes.
Well, wait. Bobby,
yeah.
Talk amongst yourselves.
We went off on a weird tangent last time. We were talking about sports and things like that.
We did.
And it really wasn't the plan to talk about that. I should have had some water before we started, but it is what it is.
I should grab my water since it's right here.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of stuff going on. You know, we're too busy to talk to you people.
And that's our show.
Good night, everybody. Yeah.
Aren't you glad you tuned in?
86 degrees today, and we're fried.
Although I'm proud of us.
Melted down.
We have really gone a good length of the day without putting the air on, so there is that.
Except that we left it on early in the morning.
We did.
Because it was very hot in here when we got up.
And you want to get ready and dressed and be all sweaty and everything.
Right.
So that's not a good combo.
And then I had a meeting, so we had to keep it on for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's always a dilemma because, you know, it's nice to be cool and comfortable, but it would be lovely to get away with not having to run the air conditioning.
Yes.
But that never really works out.
Although we do have a blessing, I guess you could call it. The house that we purchased a few years ago has solar panels on our roof.
That's true.
So it's been hardly any rain, so it's soaking up the energy, which is amazing, and our electric bill is very low.
Yeah.
Or nothing.
Here's something I don't know anything about, and I'll make you feel guilty now.
Okay.
I'll make everyone feel guilty. Because not the last time we got together with friends, but a few times before or once before that, one of our friends, who we'll call John, was talking to me about, you know, all of the complicated stuff that goes into making like environmentally friendly things, and how, you know, there's a lot of people who are essentially slave laborers who are mining the necessary minerals and things of this nature. Now, I don't feel too guilty in as much as the solar panels were already on the house.
Yeah, we had no hand in that.
But it's one of those things where you really have to, you know, at some point somebody has to sit down and figure out how to balance all this stuff out. So we're not exploiting, pardon me, exploiting people for one reason.
To benefit others.
To benefit something else.
Better. Yeah.
So if anybody knows about solar panels and, you know, the labor conditions that go into putting them together, let us know.
I would love to hear that.
Because I would like to research that more. As I said, I don't feel too bad about it because we actually already had them installed. And so we're using them to benefit the planet.
Yes.
But we're not the ones who pay. I don't know if that makes any sense. That's what I tell myself. But anyway, that's something I would like to look into more. But, you know, just we take a lot of things for granted in the U.S. about how other people are treated around the world. And
that is true. And you don't actually necessarily think about the behind the scenes of how things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's the same with, like, I guess all technology. So, you know, there's a lot of good technology that helps people do things more efficiently and using less energy and so on and so forth. But if they require, you know, someone in another country to go down into a mine in very dangerous conditions for virtually no wages to find the minerals that are the metals or whatever it is that are necessary to, you know, make the chips for the computers or whatever. You know, I mean, there's somehow or another that part of the story doesn't get told.
That's true.
Well, and I only brought that up because you mentioned the solar panels.
I did, because that's the only reason why, since it's been hardly any rain here, is I keep thinking about it just sucking in the energy.
Yeah, well, it is true. It is true. And I mean, obviously there is an environmental benefit, which I'm happy about, but it's nothing. There's virtually nothing that humans do, good or bad, that doesn't come with a cost.
That is so true. Very true.
That's pretty deep.
That was very deep. Deep thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talked about sports last time, so we'll just be depressing this time.
It was kind of funny how we just kind of got off on a tangent last week and then ended up that going into the whole thing. There is one thing I would like to touch about and actually have recorded on here for our future selves and whoever is listening is my unemployment saga. We haven't really mentioned it on here, but I got laid off the end of March from my job of almost 9 years. David and I were just talking about something, and you don't even know
those bastards.
they want to hire me. We were talking about how AI, know, could be a culprit for I'm obviously using LinkedIn, Indeed, all the different vehicles that you can receive information about jobs and stuff like that. Immediately after we talked, I went back upstairs. I went back on LinkedIn, and there was an article about how AI is used in 75% or 80% of the intake. That's scanning it first, and then it's like how your resume could be going into a dark hole. That's what the premise was, and I was like, that's true.
And it's, in so many ways, the law kind of lags behind technology, as it always seems to. And by the way, I'm not speaking on behalf of my employer. I always have to say that.
Disclaimer.
Although I didn't mention that when we started, I went off on a thing about the Dobbs decision and a bunch of court cases, and I didn't say that before, but it applies anytime I talk about the law.
Correct.
Although I do not work for a law firm, I work for a technology company, as it turns out, that produces, among other things, legal content. So anyway, I am a lawyer, but I am only speaking for myself. There's a whole bunch of issues here around employment, companies and recruiters and recruiting firms and so forth can use artificial intelligence to do things like sort resumes, figure out which candidates should get interviews, even maybe come up with interview questions, take information from resumes and whatever else you might submit, and for all I know, maybe even your LinkedIn profile if you're going through LinkedIn or whatever. And they gather the information and they try to, through machine learning, come up with some, sort of way of ranking candidates or selecting candidates. I mean, ultimately, of course, a human being makes the decision whether or not to hire somebody. But there are a lot of uses for AI like that behind the scenes. And so there's only, as far as I know, there are only two states that have even tried to address this. Maybe I'm wrong. I should take that back. There may be three. I think California may have weighed in on this. Illinois in a limited way, and New York State. I'm not aware of any other states that have done this. Illinois, the only issue in Illinois is that there are protections for whatever data or information an employer gathers about you through that process, through AI. They have to protect it, and there are some limitations. We also, it's similar in a way, but in a much less involved way. We have a statute in Illinois called the Biometric Information Privacy Act, BIPA.
I did not know that.
Well, it deals with things like, if you use a fingerprint scanner, an electronic fingerprint scanner stores information about your fingerprints. So, for example, you might go to a well-known amusement park and you use a fingerprint scanner. And they're collecting that data. Illinois law has a lot of restrictions on, you have to be notified that they're collecting data. They can only use it for certain purposes. They have to destroy it, or get rid of it at a certain point. And under the Biometric Information Privacy Act in Illinois, there are severe penalties for companies that violate it. Under this law that deals with using AI to collect information, there aren't those kind of penalties, so it doesn't have the teeth that the Biometric Information Privacy Act has. In New York, there's a law fairly recently that says if employers use AI in the hiring process, I could be wrong, it may also apply to employment decisions after hiring, but in any event, in the hiring process. So the kinds of things we're talking about, using AI to kind of take information from your resume or from an online profile or whatever and try to rank it and decide, you know, who should get interviews and who shouldn't or that sort of thing. The New York law requires companies to audit that process from time to time.
To make sure that it's actually like not...
Well, to verify that there's not implicit biases written into it, so that, for example, it doesn't inadvertently, you know, suppress candidates who belong to protected classes and things like that, right?
Interesting.
Because, I mean, we've seen, and these two things may not really be that closely related, so pardon my ignorance on this, but we've seen early AI models, interactive models, that gather information from a particular source like social media will have, you know, it's hard to call it an inanimate thing racist or sexist or misogynistic or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, in some of the early models, when people would interact with them, they would use racist terminology or whatever. So in other words, if the information that you're working from or the way in which the machine learning, you know, processes information somehow or another brings bias into that process. Again, it's not people think of it as thinking. It's not thinking. It's an inanimate thing.
Right.
But it's functioning like thinking in a way, right? And so there's a possibility, pardon me, that you could have biases in there that you don't realize, and you could end up, and if you're the human being on the employer's side of that process, you wouldn't know that you're not seeing all the candidates.
Well, that's what
that
I was
you
thinking.
Might see.
Yeah, is like if it's automatically looking to see, I'm just using this as an example, like I've worked 3 jobs, very long time, so if it's saying like, oh, this person has 30 years experience, like a bias that you said, they were looking for somebody younger or something like that, you know, kind of thing. And then I was also thinking, like, if they're not a person is viewing my resume before it gets to a human, can AI write my resume to get past a thing to right. Thing? I don't know.
And I will say this. I mean, I have plenty of cynicism about artificial intelligence, but and I think almost everyone does, even people who are working in the field, even companies who are trying to sort of harness it. I think we all should, and most people do, have a healthy degree of skepticism. I do think the reason why employers and recruiters would want to use something like this is I think they feel like artificial intelligence will use sort of objective criteria, and it will take implicit biases, human implicit biases, out of it. But we're not at the point, I think, at this point where we can really know that, right? So the motivation, I think, in a lot of, I mean, part of the motivation, to be blunt, is cost cutting and
right.
making
Save
the process
time.
Easier.
Yeah.
The employer doesn't have to interview as many people and all that sort of thing. So there's a cynical side to it, right? But on the other hand, I do think from a good faith point of view, I think there are employers who say, look, if we can have some non-biased way that doesn't involve human beings who are, we're all biased, we all have implicit biases, and so if at every step of the way human beings are making the decision and screening and so forth, it may be more difficult to keep the bias out of that process, whereas maybe if you can use AI to, you know, get to the point where you have just a group of candidates who are clearly qualified, meet a lot of the criteria that the employer is looking for, then you're going to have a less biased process overall. And, you know, so I think there's a good faith belief in that, but I just don't think the technology is at the point where we necessarily can trust it. And you could end up going backwards instead of forwards on the issue of bias, right? And so like this law in New York that requires an audit, I guess at this point it's not entirely clear what that would involve. Like, what does the employer do? I mean, in some ways, you know, there's traditional guidance that's been around for a long time. The EEOC and I assume the New York, equivalent has an awful lot of guidance to have for employers to make sure that they're not, you know, inadvertently or advertently leaving people out, right? So there's guidance out there that you could use, but then you have to figure out how to apply that guidance to the AI process that leads to the group of candidates that you select from.
Well, and I guess you just tapped on something that I wasn't actually thinking about, is if you are using AI in a good way to remove anything, instead of a person actually looking at your resume and say, oh, I hate the college you went to, you're not getting through.
Right. Right. And I do think that's of some value. You know, I've heard from people who work in, for example, the cooperative education space, where you're taking college students and placing them in sort of internships and that sort of thing to get college credit for working in the real world, so to speak. I've heard from people in that area that's oftentimes an employer will only look at sort of like the first page of a resume. So if the first page of the resume says, you know, has your address and your education and your experience, and the second page has things like, you know, your extracurricular activities and, you know, band and orchestra and this and that, they don't want to know about that. They tear that sheet of paper off and toss it. This is in the old days when things were on paper, toss it in the garbage, because that's where, you know, the inequities in society sort of come out, right? Like if you went to, for example, some of the Ivy League schools, I'm highly critical of Ivy League schools, but some of them also do a really, really great job in trying to get a very diverse student body and trying to find qualified candidates who come from, you know, marginalized communities. They actually do. I just saw, listened in on a seminar where someone from Yale was talking about the work that Yale does. So you know, if the front page of the resume that has things like where you went to school and what your grade point average is and things like that, there's at least a chance that there's less, and those sort of objective statistics or that objective data, there's at least some chance that if you're only focusing on those things, you're still getting a good, broad, diverse group of candidates. But when you move beyond that to things that are more about, you know, the kind of suburb you grew up in and the kind of activities you had available to you, that's where you get into a wealth bias.
Yes.
Right? Where, like, we didn't have much money, but we happened to be fortunate enough to go to a very good high school with a tremendous amount of opportunities. So we could do things like choir and, you know, orchestra and plays and debate club and all those kind of things. But not everybody gets that. So employers have already made the effort to try to eliminate the stuff that everybody used to like to brag about, mm-hmm. but doesn't really, A, tell you much about what kind of employee they would be, and two, you know, if you're only looking at those kind of touchy-feely sorts of things, like, oh, well, you were in debate club and I was in debate club, you know, you're inadvertently screening a lot of people who are very qualified, but they came from some economic disadvantage, so they didn't have those opportunities.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's the kind of thing I suppose you could train the AI to do, to, you know, in an electronic sense, tear off the second page of the resume,
yes,
and only look at the first page kind of thing. But, you know, you still have to be able to make some evaluation as to whether or not the AI is eliminating people that it shouldn't eliminate for reasons of bias. And that's, you know, that's the real challenge. And the flip side of that, too, is that while it's a fair statement to say that everybody has biases and everybody has implicit biases, we also have the ability to recognize those things and put them in check. And I think, you know, a better solution long term is for people to confront those biases, recognize them, and learn how to put them aside. You know, I saw, this is off the topic, but I didn't watch the video clip because it would have probably made me angry, but I saw a description of it, of one of the people who runs the company that built the miniature submarine that's now lost.
Yes.
And this guy was saying, we didn't want to hire, this was before the tragedy, right? So this is earlier in time. The guy said something like, we didn't want to hire a bunch of 50-year-old white guys because they're not inspiring. And the person who pointed this out to me is a black microbiologist, a woman who's about my age. But what she correctly, I think, identified in that statement was they weren't talking about white guys. They were talking about 50-year-olds.
Right.
It was the, you know, they hide behind referring to white men, but they're really talking about old people.
Right.
So, you know, her reaction was, this is just straight age discrimination. And, you know, if you look at the world today, you talk again, talking about implicit biases and so forth. I mean, I would argue that age discrimination is one of the most transparently obvious things that's going on in the world. And, you know, because look at social media. There is no one in any age group who's not yelling and screaming about people who are older than them in very, very blatant ways. And so now we've gotten to the point where the idea that old people are bad is just sort of inherently ingrained in everything people do. And when the guy from that company talked about not wanting the 50-year-old white guy, I guarantee you he didn't want a 50-year-old black guy. He didn't want a 50-year-old black woman. He didn't want a Hispanic woman or an Asian woman or anybody else who was 50. It's the 50 years old. It's not the race or gender or ethnicity. And that's the thing is that you know, once we are so wrapped up in something like criticizing people because of their generation, this is a whole different topic we could talk about.
Oh yeah, we could have a whole thing about that.
But rather than just trying to use, I mean, to bring it back, I guess what I'm getting at is rather than trying to use technology to avoid our biases, I think it would just be better to confront our biases, like, you know, people need to recognize what they're saying when they're saying it and how they think. And this is a similar thing in journalism that happens all the time, where the journalists now just think that all they have to do is stick a microphone in front of one person's face and have them say, express one view, and then stick a microphone in front of somebody else's face and have them express a contrary view, and their job is done. Instead of saying, my job is to get at the truth, no matter who it helps or hurts. And yes, of course, I have biases, but we all have biases. So when I do my job, I'll do my best to set aside my bias, but my objective is to get at the truth. They've given up. Journalists have completely given up on that concept, right? So because they don't want to be accused of bias, and because, you know, in their defense, they recognize that they have biases, but everyone has biases. And everyone is capable of seeing them, confronting them, and holding them in check.
And they know that you're a journalist and that's your job, you know, kind of thing. So it's not like something that is not, you're not supposed to do, you know, kind of thing.
There is another thing, and we've already gone on for 23 and a half minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There is another thing that is somewhat related in a way, kind of, sort of. But one of the things that came up in the news the past couple of weeks is that there is an organization, I think it was started in Florida, and they call themselves, this is one of those organization names that I hate with the heat of a thousand suns. They call themselves Moms for Liberty. All right. Anyway, they are a supposed grassroots organization that's trying to, you know, fight for quote-unquote parents' rights. And I'll get to that part of it in a minute because that's nonsense. But they're not really a grassroots organization. They're highly funded. They get money from a lot of rich and powerful right-wing individuals and organizations. So they're not at all grassroots. But they also, Moms for Liberty, have a number of affiliates around the country, including right here in Illinois. There's several of them. They have individual chapters, and they also have groups that they work with. One is called Awake Illinois. Let's pause for a moment and appreciate the stupidity and irony of a conservative organization calling itself Awake. The people who whine about the word woke incessantly call themselves Awake. All right, but put that aside. But the news story that came out recently is that the Southern Poverty Law Center, one of the country's oldest and most well-respected and most important civil rights organizations, just labeled Moms for Liberty and some of their affiliates a hate group. Now, SPLC has been identifying and labeling hate groups for decades. They have a page on their website called Hate Watch, where they provide extensive detail about all kinds of organizations, not just white racist organizations or anti-immigrant organizations or whatever, but all kinds of organizations across the spectrum. And they've done it for years, I mean, for decades. And they are one of the most well-respected organizations in the country when it comes to this sort of thing. But so they labeled this group a hate group because, in the words of SPLC, they are an anti-government extremist group. And what they mean by that is that they have sent people all around the country into, like, for example, school board meetings to yell and scream and intimidate and threaten school board members. Initially, it was over things like COVID restrictions and remote learning and, you know, kids wearing masks and so forth. But it morphed into this more general attack on every aspect of school life. Like, you know, they try to get books banned in the library. They are the most triggered organization in the world when it comes, like, the sight of a rainbow will drive these suburban wine moms off the rails. You know, they don't want teachers to teach history accurately in America. They don't want American students to learn about race relations and slavery and segregation and the assassination of Martin Luther King and so on and so forth. Like I said, they are vehemently, vehemently anti-LGBTQ. Every other day, they or one of their affiliate organizations is pushing some crazy, crazy nonsense about, you know, being triggered. These are the folks who will basically say that if you acknowledge the existence of LGBTQ plus people in school or in the presence of children, that equates to talking about sex.
So insane.
I saw, just as an aside, a Republican former candidate for governor in Illinois from the town Wheaton in DuPage County. This woman named Jean Ives posted something about a pride event at a local zoo in DuPage County. And oh my gosh, it was a pride event for children. And so I asked her, you will not be surprised I didn't get an answer. I said, you know, I don't understand this. On your profile, it says you're a mom of 4 or 5, whatever it is. And you have a picture of yourself and your husband and your children. I said, if you say you're a mother, I mean, you had sex to have your children, didn't you? Why would you sexualize your Twitter profile? Are you a groomer? Are you a straight groomer because you're talking about being a mother? I assume that means you had sex to have your children. You had sex at least 4 times, right? I didn't go into that. But I mean, you know,
right.
Just like, and you see
just
what I'm saying?
Hypocrisy.
I mean, right. It makes no sense. If you're going to talk about having relationships, straight or gay or otherwise, and having children or whatnot, I guess you could say that means you're talking about sex, but of course not. Of course you're not. You're just simply, you know, you're just simply talking about your life. But it's the same sort of thing. Anyway, Moms for Liberty is all up in the same business. And there are these local affiliates called Awake Illinois, and there's a Naperville group and a group up here in Lake County. And they're constantly trying to push this. It's not just... And this is the problem I have with SPLC's designation. They are a hate group, but it's not just that they're anti-government. They're actually really trying to use government to force their views on other people. They're trying to take over school boards. They're trying to force school officials to censor and ban books and ban and, you know, censor what teachers can teach in the classroom. It's really actually much more authoritarian than it is anti-government.
Yeah.
So I do sort of take issue with the way they categorize them, although I understand because, for example, they report that, you know, people involved in public schools have gotten death threats and things like this. And so it is, there's an element of it that is sort of like, you know, the anti-government militia movement back in the 1990s and, you know, with Waco and Ruby Ridge and all that craziness. But it's also a very, very authoritarian. I mean, it's anti-democracy, but it's pro-authoritarian. They want to force, you know, fine, you don't want your kids to read a certain book, that's for you. They're trying to force everybody else's families to live, every other family to live according to their way. And they're trying to use institutions of government to do that. And so that's an those are organizations I would really, really look out after. You know that, you know, Bill Clinton used to say in the old days when, I don't know that you should really use this expression anymore, but Bill Clinton used to say, a hit dog always hollers, right? And you know that the SPLC hit a nerve when these folks just, you know, they lost their mind. Ted Cruz was screaming about it.
Oh,
Ted
Lordy.
Ted Cruz, the most disliked human being on the planet. Everyone hates you, Ted. He was screaming about it. Here's what I love. One of their taglines is, we don't co-parent with the government. Even though they're trying to force the government to tell you how to be a parent.
Right.
They still say, because they're liars and hypocrites, we don't co-parent with the government. Meanwhile, they were singing the praises of a handful of members of the House of Representatives, Republicans in the House of Representatives, who tried to pass a resolution condemning the Southern Poverty Law Center for labeling Moms for Liberty a hate group. Okay, first of all, the Southern Poverty Law Center has a far better reputation than the United States Congress and both parties in it and every other aspect of government. They're a phenomenal organization. But aside from that, these pro-liberty people were praising agents of the state for attacking a private organization for expressing an opinion. Just marinate on that for a moment. We don't co-parent with the government. We just want the government to shut down our critics, take books out of your library. Another thing is, they're also, and we're running late on time, but just think about this for a minute. They're attacking sex ed in schools. They don't want teachers, they don't want school children to have sex ed in school. Now, even when we were in school, I mean, mm-hmm. I was a freshman in high school in 1980. And because I was on the freshman swim team, which was a winter sport, there's a health class that every freshman has to take, but I had to take it the first part of the school year because I was going to be on the swim team and it was a substitute for gym class. Anyway, whatever. Hear me out on this. Even back in I misspoke. Oh my God. I just made myself 4 years younger than I am. It was 1976. In 1976, a big part of this freshman health class was not just talking about sex. We all knew everything in that regard anyway by the age of 14, which is also why this whole thing is ridiculous. 14 in 1976,
without the internet.
Without the internet. We knew everything. But in any event, one of the big things they talked about all the way back in 1976 was consent, right? They we were all boys in the class, and they hammered us over the head and said, you know, you can't do anything without consent. No means no. Of course, now they're even better about it, and they'd say it's not enough to just say no means no. They actually have to say yes, right? But the point is, they already knew in 1976 that they had to teach kids. They were already concerned about stuff like date rape back then. So this is what these folks want to take away from kids. They don't want kids to know what's inappropriate. They don't want kids to be able to detect when adults are coming onto them and being creeps and so forth. They want these kids to be vulnerable. It has nothing to do with protecting children, just like it has nothing to do with parents' rights, because they want to take away your rights as a parent. If you have a trans kid, they don't want you to be able to make healthcare decisions for your kid. They want the government to do it. If you send your kid to school, they don't want you. They want to dictate what your kids learn, what books your kids can read. So this, they aren't, they're anti-parents' rights, absolutely 100% anti-parents' rights. But on top of all of that, they want our children ignorant and vulnerable, and that leads to one thing and one thing only: adults abusing children.
So true. So true. And all the teachers, coaches, all that stuff that's involved in that.
So yeah, Awake Illinois is a bad organization. They're a hate group. Moms for Liberty is a hate group. There's, I could rattle off the names of people that I've encountered in the state of Illinois who are involved in these organizations. We'll talk about that next time. There's some dumb cowboy from a town of 85 people in western Illinois wants to come into our town and dictate what our children can learn. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Anyway.
Not on our watch.
Not on our watch.
But it is important to bring that up, because I think just making people aware that there's all these subgroups of crazy ass people, it's just insane. I wouldn't know. Yeah. That's insane.
Well, and the good thing is I've encountered a lot of people through social media who are fighting back against these folks. But
which is good.
But I would love to talk more about the, some of the specific individuals.
I was going to say, I would love to punch the face.
No, but there is this. All right. We've run late, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's this one guy named Steve Lucy, and he claims to be a rancher. There actually is cattle ranching out in the western part of the state of Illinois. I went to college with a guy from out there whose family was heavily into cattle ranching and actually made a lot of money trading bull semen. I'm not making this up. You know, there was an episode of L.A. Law early on where that was
the subject matter
of it. Yeah, they had a lawsuit about it. Anyway, but this guy is like the single most arrogant person I've ever seen. And he does this stuff where he takes selfies of himself. All day long, he's taking selfies of himself on the ranch. And it's always like with his cowboy hat down, kind of over shading his eyes.
Right.
I swear to God, this guy probably spends more time primping in front of the mirror. Remember the term metrosexual? We used to say metrosexual.
Yep.
And some guys actually had a sense of humor about it in a self-deprecating kind of way. This guy is like that, only he's a rancher. And he'll take these selfies with this hat brim down over his eyes so you can't really see his face.
Right.
And he's got a dirty t-shirt on. I mean, it's the most homoerotic stuff I think I've ever seen. I wouldn't surprise me if he's got an OnlyFans page, but probably not. But he lectures everybody all the time. And then when you push back, he blocks you. So I know like 50 people that he's blocked, myself included. I might have used some alternate accounts to give him a hard time from time to time. And he blocked those too. But he's just literally the term all hat and no cattle was made for this guy.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah. It's too bad I didn't take some screen captures of some of the stuff he said. But, you know, he's the same thing. Crazy anti-trans nonsense, pushing all these lies about what, you know, parents do for their children. But he comes from a town of 85 people, and he comes up here. He just appeared at an event in Naperville, the fourth largest city in the state of Illinois, and some guy from a town of 85 people thinks he can lecture to people in Naperville about what their schools should do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't tell you about bull semen. Don't tell me about what our kids should learn in school.
So nuts.
Well, that was a long episode.
It was. So if you lasted to the end, congratulations.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this episode, and we will be back next week for the last week of June. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.